just start and see what happens?
Yeah. What is new in the adventures of Elijah?
Well, you know, what I find joyful about the podcast is that, you know, it always gains energy because we have things to say and there's passion. And it's hard. And other people have been getting comments, lots of people saying that, you know, they're liking and they're getting a lot from it. Also, people who've worked with me like listening to it because it's not about them. So they don't feel like charged up energetically. They can kind of sit back and sort of listen to it. But when I start to listen to it, it's just annoying and rambly and not to the point. And I realize it's just best not to listen to it, because in the authority in the mirror, I just have to be, we want to be what we are, and who wants to stick around for that. And part of that, at least for me, is a bit of a messy person who finds his way towards the truth. The other thing I realized about our podcast is, like, why we like talking to each other is because we find each other hilarious and we crack each other up all the time. So when I hear a bit of that in the podcast, I was like, oh, we definitely should do more of that, because that's, I think at the end of the day, no matter like how serious you are about the concepts of reality and the way in which you are inhabiting and living your life to be the authority of the mirror, you're going to end up with a sense of humor, because it's just hard to take it seriously because we're just mistake-making machines going around like doing stupid things. So that's what I like. All the people who are close to me, there's always comedy in there, no matter how serious. So
despite how much I like Merlot, I do find laughing to be the best drug. So
yeah.
Why not? What else are you going to do to stay sane?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, I think we did do a couple podcasts and then started with the third one. But the second one was about your life. So when I've been telling people about the podcast, and then I go into my little spiel about who you are, I do feel it's important for people to know who you are, because your life is so, I literally don't know anybody like you. And you know, just the outer details of your life, 10 children, no school, no bank account. Like, those are my top three. You know, it's to let people know that they can, that you don't have to live in this thing that you lovingly refer to as the Matrix. You don't have to.
Yes, even though I have discovered it's very malleable.
As pervasive as it is in how demanding of obedience and attention it gets there, I think we both have lived in our own way, realizing there are ways around that if you have a desire for independence from it. And once you achieve it once, it gives you motivation to keep going.
Yeah. I mean, I was in it to win it for a long time, and then I had a long time where I was fighting it, which I found out to be it's a very dumb thing to do, to feed energy into something you don't want. And
don't
then
fight City Hall.
I spent a long time just saying, I'm out.
Yeah.
Which is also an option. However, as I've grown up and matured, hopefully emotionally, I realized that you can play and not be attached. And why not? That we're here. Somebody put it here. So
I think the integration is what I find interesting, and maybe you could speak about this a little bit, because I have chosen my way of participating undercover, if you will. So I have a bank account. I own a home with a mortgage, et cetera, like various things that are definitely in the Matrix. I even voted in the last election. If for whatever reason I felt like, why not do that? But you, I wonder if you could, like the integration is, sorry, I lost my thought, just like I did every podcast. I always lose my thought at the beginning. So it's that the thing that you are, give me one second here.
It's my stunning good looks. This happens a lot to me. So
yeah, and I'm thank God I'm not actually staring at you. This would just be much worse. You'd have 11 children. No. The integration of how to, like, at some point, what I was going to say is, I think what we share is that there's something incomplete if you decide not to live in the world at all, which I did too, as an ascetic monk type person. You're not really achieving any mastery if you don't figure out how to do what you do in the world. You know, some spiritual teachers will say, you know, be in the world but not of it, or something mm-hmm. like that. Sure. So I'm wondering, maybe you could speak a little bit, because you said you were out, and now can you talk about the dance between being in it and being out of it? Like, how do you, I mean, obviously you have relationships, you participate, you have to pay for things when you need them. Like, yeah. I mean, those are outer things, but say, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. And just for the record, there are bank accounts. They just aren't set up in normal ways. And the integration is ever continuing. And it goes along the spectrum that correlates exactly with my emotional maturity. So yeah. At the beginning, I think I was so angry at myself that I had been so duped, which is what it felt like.
You were angry at yourself.
To play this game that I directed all of my rage at the game for a little while, especially as we started to prove that the game was not made in our favor. Like, after the birth of our daughter at the hospital, my wife realized that's not what she wants to do again. And so discovering home birth and having a baby at home, and then, oh, nobody actually died. You know, like, the Matrix will tell you will happen. We started just breaking through these things that we thought had been true, that were emotionally very a strong control grid.
Can I slow you down for 1 second and just say to, because of, there may be listeners, like, you say game, and that's a shorthand for
the
something
normal life, the way we're supposed to do it.
Right. So how does that end up?
Like, go to school, get good grades, get an A, have no idea that you're actually being brainwashed and conditioned for a fixed response to authority. And then that's the game. And when I started realizing that, oh my goodness, that game, it not only is at every level of our being, because we're born into it, but it is also maniacal at every level, and none of it is good. And I didn't even know what was going on. So when I found that out, that created a lot of anger, and I aimed it at the thing.
How did you find out? I mean, was it one thing, or was it a slow
the whole arrival? Home birth thing was kind of that started cracking things, because we were like, we did that. We weren't supposed to do that. What about this? We don't want to do this either. Do we have to do this? And so in pretty quick order, things like employment, like health insurance, like, they just started. We're like, how about no? Mm. We started with no. And I didn't have any solutions back then.
What were you doing with your life at the time it was your daughter?
I was fixing computer. My first daughter, I was working at a bank. Uh-huh. I was a banker. Isn't that hilarious?
I haven't heard that story. Okay.
So, I trained for 8 weeks to perceive everyone who came in the door as a potential criminal. That's what the training was about, which another layer of the game, which is why you feel weird when you go to the bank and they treat you like a criminal. That's actually what they think could be happening, because that's how they're taught. It is such a culture of fear. I mean, you can make the argument that money is fear bottled up, lack, you know, just circulating around. And that, it's at every level there. Tellers scared to death that if they get a loss, like if they cash a check that isn't correct and it's a scam, they'll lose their job. And like, everywhere you look is potential threat in that world. And I if anybody still remembers what a fax machine is, I just quit by fax one day and never went in again. And then I went to sell cars. I mean, so we're dredging the bottom of personal soul searching here.
But when you were a director of a music.
Yeah, this was after
in a church. Was that later? Or
this
before?
Was kind of after the music thing. I got a job right out of college. Was not equipped to navigate the political structures of religion. I had terrible habits of like saying things that I meant and stuff like that, which you're not allowed to do. You have to learn this like diplomatic speak where you don't say what you mean, but then behind the scenes, you do your little work to get what you want. I couldn't do that.
Everybody can relate to this because nobody's saying what they're really... Well, first of all, I'm not necessarily think that it's wrong to that you shouldn't filter what you say. I think you can definitely filter what you say, but we're talking about the difference between being
we're
authentic.
Talking about acting.
Being fake.
That's
yeah.
what I mean.
But you're saying that this awakening happened when your daughter was born, but you, and just from what I know of your story, like when you were in the church as a music director, you already knew there was a game going on. So you knew it before then, no?
I knew there was a game, but like I still sat there and said my prayers. I still recited that prayer where we like give our will over to this other being. Like I did a lot of things very unconsciously. And they were still emotionally hooked into my being at that time. So I was kind of one foot in conditioning and one foot realizing there's greener grass.
Well, but... Oh, so yeah, so it's both a lightning strikes type of thing, and also a series of things leading you out into the rain, holding a rod.
Yeah, it took a series because I didn't have a spine, so it's not like I could say, "I've seen the truth now, I'm going to blow this all up." Like I wasn't brave enough to do that.
Well, I do. I'm tracking, and I do want to go back to the story you're telling, but something important is up for me right now, which is, you know, you grew up in a Mennonite thing, and then like you're working in a church, and you're talking about authority, and also in religion, like you pray to this other being, but obviously you have a relationship with existence, for lack of a better way of describing God, you know, just that which has given you life. Mm-hmm. Like, where is the...
where was that? That was in the music. That's
well,
the place
where in there. But like you haven't lost your connection to God. I'm going to use the word God because I don't know what it means to you, and so if it's not a word you want to use, I want to hear it. I'm guessing, wonder what you're like. First of all, to be an authority in the mirror, I want to make sure that we from my vantage point, I feel like I'm only an authority as the drop of the ocean. I'm not the ocean. God's the ocean. I'm in the ocean. So what is it for you, faith-wise? Like, what is it that you we talked last week about hope and belief. So what is it that you are convicted about when it comes to this?
Yeah, I can feel that I'm the drop and I can feel that I'm the ocean.
Do you feel
both of those.
Do you ever talk to God, so to speak? Is that part of your faith or your practice? Or like, was that ruined? Obviously, probably was somewhat ruined in your religious experience.
I would say I don't use language. I am trying to feel the force flowing that I know is everything. And I try to navigate based on that. So I try to get my vibe a certain way, which is not charged up, so I can notice the way it wants to go.
Which is
music. I mean, I'm doing music.
Yeah.
That's why I was in music, because I could feel that and I could open to it and it would come through me and it affects people. So I think my paintbrush kind of.
I think this is important because it's unusual and for somebody listening, like, and some of the feedback and comments I've got were when we were talking more about the energetics of things. And what I think is unusual about it is you don't have a linear relationship with existence. You might have some linear relationship with yourself, but you're trying to experience that which is the ocean, but you're not doing it in a linear way. Because praying could be, I mean, I'm a Jew by blood, and I have Jewish tendencies. And also, two of my favorite students, you know who you are, Libra, Jewish Libras, you know, they process very linearly, and like inner dialogue comes in a voice that says things. And I think that can be a very Jewish thing. So I just wonder if you could speak more about kind of that feeling, that flow, that energetics, because we're talking about manifesting and being the authority of your life. And the way you do it, I think, could be not only inspiring, but informative to how someone can think about this in a not so linear way. Because I think about God, and I talk to God, and whatever that means, and I have a certain energetic, but also a certain verbal relationship with it. And that's not what you do.
I mean, when I sit in front of the ocean, I can hear a voice talking. Mm. That's not what I put out.
Give an example. Like when last time you said to the ocean, like how did that happen? Like what was that?
Well, I've learned, hear? I've just, like I did spend, despite like my repressed upbringing, all I ever wanted to be was a magician. Except I didn't want to perform in front of people. I was just enamored by the magic. And then as fate would have it, I spent a bunch of years studying with, she called herself a Celtic shaman, which is really just shamanic work, but in the pantheon of the Celtic deities. And so that was the first time where I really developed the skills where I can walk in a room and like my fingers will tingle depending what's going on. Mm-hmm. And like, that's when I started to learn how to navigate based on that. So when I sit in front of the ocean, I can feel that consciousness that's there in that body. And it's like I'm tuning into a radio station, and then a voice starts speaking.
And it's so, not necessarily a voice of guidance either. Like, I don't want to make an assumption that it's,
I'm never really asking anymore. Like I've given up that. I've given up the like Santa Claus deliver the present. Like I don't even know what way it should go.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to listen. Because I'm that, and I'm also sitting there. I'm the listener and the talker, like at some level. And so I'm trying to like witness that. I found that to be, not only is it always accessible anytime I want it or need it, but I think it's a completely different way to navigate where you stop looking for answers because like they kind of become irrelevant and you're just, it's not, it's like the most active state of surrender is maybe how I might describe it.
And what's the value of it? I mean, I'm just being practical, but
you avoid misery and you're tuned into something that I feel is what we're all searching for, really, at some level.
Which is what?
When you feel whole.
Yeah.
When all of you is like alive, like I gave up looking for that because I realized it was everywhere. And now I just work on noticing it.
Say that again, first of all, because that's so good.
I looked for it for a long time, right? Like, I want to know the answer. How do you do it? How do you get there? What's the trick? Like, that's my mind. And that led me to like so many dead ends that like I just got annoyed with it. And through a lot of the training that I received, like I was lucky. I wouldn't have thought this up on my own. But like, you can just exist at a different level and realize that you can tune into things that you didn't even know to ask. And it's way better than asking questions. So it's like you can go through life knowing that there's this undercurrent of truth that's flowing and it just leads you where you're supposed to be. And that's very different than what I did the first half, which was, where do you want to be? Like, what do you want?
Which to be clear, comes from that training inside the game is that what you're looking for is outside of yourself and you need to seek it. And if you do it the way that we suggest you do it, you're going to get a cookie. You're going to get a reward for it. And
yeah,
and then you're going to be happy.
The game seems to be like a hologram, a fractal build, in that every component of it yeah. requires you to consensually offer power that is then given back to you in limited form under certain conditions with strings. And that's everywhere.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, having spent a lot of time in China, other parts of Asia too, but China specifically, is that Eastern cultures don't necessarily do that. But they do condition people in a different way. Because what was fascinating to me the first time I went to China, they were still in the middle of a massive mimicking of Western culture. And I remember going to this monastery in Hangzhou, like we had to walk almost like a half a mile up steep steps, but in the parking lot, and it was this ancient monastery, in the parking lot was a KFC and a Starbucks. And I laughed, and I was, and maybe some part of me in the past would have been offended. But what I realized was, slowly as I got to know China and people there better, that they looked at Westerners' spiritual money and consumerism as our form of spirituality, and they, the same way you get someone gets like Om Namah Shivaya tattooed on them or some Chinese symbol, Chinese people look at American culture, get a t-shirt that says Malibu on it or something, because they look at Starbucks or KFC or something like that, like this is what we're good at.
And that's when you realize that the authority, the meaning that gives to things, is like power you have.
Right. And that's to go back to what we're saying, the conditioning, that everything you described is very Western in a way, the seeking outside of yourself. And it's different in the East, but not that different in a way, because cultures come from poverty and they live more tribally in a certain way and collectively, and they live in lack that they're not allowed to speak to. They're not allowed to have wanting. So then they see Americans and they go, wow, they've really got everything because they just do what they want. And they buy stuff. And then you go over to China and you realize, oh, like they've got these, you know, imitations of what you're talking about, as if that's the best part of our culture. I mean, and I had to, just a fun fact, I had to tell this young man, I mean, every, when I went more regular going to Shanghai and studying in the morning, I would go in to Starbucks to get coffee. And side note, go to there because I got local coffee and had milk and got really sick. So I'm like, I think I'll stick with Starbucks. So I would go every morning. This kid who's like in his mid-20s was managing it, spoke English, and I had this great relationship with him. And at some point I brought this recording of my teacher, like talking really intensely about something. And I didn't know what it meant because my manner was like almost zero. And I said, what's he saying? And he said, oh, this is bullshit. He's saying all this spirituality about Tai Chi. He said, we Chinese people, we just think Tai Chi is sports. That's all it is. And I said, well, we actually don't think Starbucks is good coffee. He kind of had this look on his face because the Starbucks in Shanghai at that time, they were like Italian cafes. Like people went to them and sat there like they were in Italy because they thought that's what Starbucks is. Made me laugh.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right. So to come back, you're talking about not being in the game and all this conditioning, but you have developed and found a way to experience this greater reality without the overlay of religion and what the overlay of the conditioning. And the value of it is that for you, the way out of misery is to attune to that.
Yeah, and I mean, I've made some assumptions along the way based on things that feel true to me. Like, I mentioned it last time, but when I heard the human design guy say we're energies on trajectories, like I spent many years reading all of the book, all of the, like, what's your purpose, what you should do with your life, how to find right work. Like I did so many searches like that. And I was not mature enough to realize, dude, you're so blind. you keep looking for your path. You couldn't get off your path if you tried. So how about you reconfigure your definition of what this is all doing here that you're doing and come at it with a completely different perspective. And so that is my perspective. It's like, you can't not fulfill your purpose. So if you could just stop looking for it and not allow obstacles to grow up in between the real you and reality or whatever is the other, the experience is going to be transformed.
But you are saying something a little contradictory here, because you're saying you can't not be on your path, but then you're saying, here's what you need to do.
So, because I believe we have great power over our experience of our past, probably. Like, can I not be me?
Depends. You can by being, you can pretend not to be.
Right. It depends at what level you're asking, right? Yeah. I just decided that, let's just say that guy knows what he's talking about, that which is why astrology has some truth into it, right? There's something about the energy that impacted our form that we either agreed to or planned or are simply the recipient of, that has something to do with how we live and who we are. And so if we are in fact energies on trajectories, then there's not a whole lot that we can do to change that, because we're just going our way.
So then why are we bothering with this podcast? What you're saying there's nothing to seek?
I'm saying the direction of where to seek was something I did not understand. Like, seeking to me now happens by peeling off more layers of my onion that I have allowed to grow over the core essence of my vibration.
Well, maybe where I'm still, I need you to explain what you mean by you can't not be, I mean, it's double negative, but what do you mean you can't not be on your path? Because it sounds like you're saying you absolutely can be not on your path.
I would look back at my entire life, and now I can see the synchronicities. I mean, crazy stuff that had to happen for me to be here. And so maybe path isn't the right word, because our mind thinks that that is like a linear thing rather than this like multidimensional way of moving through the physical world. Or maybe it's not even that. Maybe it's the way a wave like expresses itself over time. I don't even know. I just know to let go, to stop looking for the things that I thought I didn't have, because I only thought I didn't have them because I couldn't see.
Still not sure if you're answering my question, but maybe it doesn't matter. I'm recalling something you said once, which is so simple. I mean, oftentimes you say things, well, when you say the right thing at the right time, it's pretty powerful. But you had said, I always feel like the universe is trying to help me. And I feel like if I could live by one thing and one thing alone, that would be it. But maybe what I think you're saying, and just correct me if I'm wrong, I'm asking why you're saying you can't not be in your path when it's very easy to be pulled off of what your natural, you talk about the wave, because I talked about that Chinese word or Taoist word, sure, which means potential, and it's a physics word of the trend of a wave. Yeah. So if you are like a wave, if you're something that's in physics, it has something natural it wants to do. But what's fascinating about humans, we can actually do what's not natural to us. Yeah. I think that's what sickness, physical sickness, is. So to me, I think you can be very much off that path. But maybe you're saying that,
well, what I'm saying is
you
that
are what you are, whether you make the choice to inhabit it or not.
And that I learned that I fared better if I gave up the perception of those things, meaning I'm not on my path.
Yeah, and I think that's something I've gotten from you over the years, that like you will bypass a certain, and I'll say it as a Jew, like a little bit of a kind of a therapy mind where like you're going to sit and process and like you'll just go straight to the acceptance as best you can. And I say best you can, because at whatever level you can create that acceptance, that's what you're going to. Is that what you just said?
Yeah. I mean, my process to me has been one of an opening.
Yeah.
A softening.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming more joyful, even in the dark. Like dark can be joy. I mean, as weird as it sounds to your mind to say, when you start receiving all of life flowing through you, I mean, I think the goal is to receive that with as little resistance as possible. Like that becomes a joyful act no matter what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy, which is why people call us crazy.
I said in one of my books, but just my own saying, and it's not. I don't know if it's unique or not, but it fits. Acceptance is the antidote to resistance. So no matter what's going on, if you have a no inside you, somewhere that's resistance. Well, I mean, sometimes if you say no to something and it's a yes to the no, that's not resistance. Like, okay, I'm not going to lay in the middle of the road and trust or something. But when you have a no because you're having an experience and you're saying no to it, you are saying no to reality. But the antidote to that is acceptance, which is, I think, what you're saying, is that if you allow all experiences to be there without resistance and accept that they're there and they're part of that path, they're part of your path and part of your purpose, then you really have no problems.
And ever. I learned that from the shamanic side. And then when I started Filipino martial arts, I learned what that felt physically. And my teacher was not like that spiritual or anything about it. But when you punched his face, like he received that force as though it was the greatest gift in the world.
Yeah.
And that was immediately repurposed into something that was painful.
Yeah. It's funny, my martial arts teacher was very similar. Like his philosophy was so high level in terms of what he thought and what he explained, but in the end, it was about about in fighting, and it was like, okay, but you know, the reason why you're telling me this great spiritual philosophy is to tell me why, like, you could kill me if you felt like it or whatever.
Well, and you could, like, I thought it after a while, I realized, like, this is high impact, like some sort of a dance that's happening here. And the more soft and supple and fluid and flowing and circular and like that you can be. And then that's how you stay alive. And then I started realizing, wait, I'm practicing that energy here to stay alive, but then I'm going back into my constricted, going to control my reality. I'm angry at this like thing. And it took a long time for that to like work itself out, to allow all of that to drain.
Yeah.
I'm talking like 10 years, you know, and I'm just getting old enough now where I cannot go back there. I don't have to go back there. I can.
Yeah.
So now my relationship with the Matrix is that's also me. And I kind of learn a lot by experimenting with, wait a minute, there's this thing here that says don't do this, or it says do this. And if I just don't, what happens? Right. And you realize that like almost every time, nothing happens. And then you start asking like, what is going on here? Because something's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But then you realize, oh, the source of the fuel for all of this isn't that, it's us. And then what happens if you start stop fueling it? Then you get to play around with that. And so it's been years of this.
Somewhere around 50, I had this realization, like, and it became a prayer that I just said to God, I'm going to, if I'm on the wrong path, like, you know, like as had been the case in my life, give me pain, give me suffering. So I know that I'm making a choice. And when nothing would happen, I became much more trusting of my instinct to follow the path that's called to me rather than what I thought, you know, based on what you're just saying, like what I thought was, you know, what the consequences might be or how someone would feel about something or what I was taught was right or wrong. And because, around that time, I remember like people would say something to me like, you know, you don't have to be upset about that. Like it's okay. Like people would talk me off various things that I was reading. You know, Sarah had coined the phrase molehill mountain, that I will go on molehill mountain because I can feel things on such a deep level in the emotional moment. And people would always talk me out of being on there because they didn't want their matrix broken. And I would cause myself great suffering by doing what I thought was the right thing to do based on my own conditioning, whether I knew I had it or not. And then, ending up in consequences that I was not happy with. And then realizing like, well, just taking the risk to do something that felt right to me or stay with something. And after a while, like I literally had a prayer, like just show me. And I felt like, I think pain, not as a morbid idea, but is a form of guidance. Like if things are out of order, you should feel that. And if you can trust that, it's another way to be the authority in the mirror, is like to just do what you want to do, but because a lot of people do this. A lot of people I've worked with, like they will manifest something or they will do something in the moment, but then they won't keep tracking it. They won't course correct as they go. But I think it's not one decision, one moment, and then you're done. The moment you decide something, you should really pay attention to the effect of that choice, because that's still the universe conversing with you around it. In an ever infinite, ever evolving unfolding. So,
and I would argue that the important part there isn't what happened; it's what you did. Like that's the thing to focus on. Like we are ultimately here, supposedly co-creating. So like we're not running the whole show. So it's like this developing mastery of the way we are that I think is what you focus on. Like I finally realized with the Matrix, if I don't stop viewing you as the enemy, like I'm the dumb one. So
I want to go back. I'm not sure I heard you correctly the first thing you said, but are you saying, because I think there's two ideas here. One is not to think about what happened. Like you said, the important part, because I think, are you saying never, or what are you saying about what are you saying about what I'm saying about tracking the effect of your choice?
I'm saying the story we tell about the effect.
Part,
right? So like I wanted this, but I got that. Like, what does that mean? I don't think it matters.
Well, I think I will say, profound realization I've been having this year in particular, my 62nd year, is that where I still had a certain amount of conditioning, my tracking was flawed because I was still tracking under the idea of good and bad or right or wrong, whether I knew it or not. And so when I'm saying about tracking, it's a different right or wrong than I thought, because it's the right or wrong of what feels wants to happen. And then when I'm out of alignment with that, or I'm in a situation that's out of order in some way, I want to feel, it's no different than what you're saying about sitting at the ocean. It's like, I want to be in relationship with how it wants to move. And I want my discomfort to inform me when I'm incorrect in my in my action or assessment of a situation. And I feel like that's ongoing, but the joy of it is that with age, oh, there's something I want to end with today, I just realized. But with age, I feel like it's just getting so much better.
We had our martial arts teacher would say the same things over and over again, like stories as though you had never heard them before, but like this was the way he taught and for years. And he always did this demonstration where he stood with his back against the wall. He held out his arms, you know, bent kind of L shape. So his elbows were by his side. And he would clench his fists and then ask somebody to push his fists towards the floor, straight down. Okay.
Yeah.
And you would note how much force that took. And then the next second, he would open his hands and direct his fingers straight out and his thumbs up. Nobody could push the hands down. Why? Because that constriction created a lack of power, right? And that opening allowed the energy to flow. And that's what I'm talking about. I've spent decades trying to remove the things that were keeping the energy from flowing because the energy is flowing in such a genius way that I just have to keep obstacles out of it as best I can.
Mm-hmm.
And magic happens. And I don't have to try because that's what we're here to experience. Whatever magic means for us, and I don't know if we planned it or maybe we did, whatever, it doesn't help to think you're a victim of it. I know that. But it's a gift that we're experiencing, so why not fully open to it?
Well, I think that's a good place to end.
Well, you had your good thing to end.
I want to read you a short thing that Bob Dylan turned 85, and he wrote in the New York Times an opinion piece about the best thing about being 80. And there's a couple, I won't read the whole thing. I'll just read a couple of my favorites. Well, is you outlive the clocks that have been chasing you. It's the freedom from that lie that anything was ever under control. You don't chase the parade anymore. You're an old king from some vanished country. Now, this is the my favorite one. You're harder to program. Love that. And you're not rushing to become anything, and you're not haunted by the things that you did. You're haunted by how little of it really mattered in the way you thought it would. And then the last piece was the worst thing about being 80. I'll just go right to the end of it. He says, the really worst part about being 80 is that at last, you've got an understanding of something that might have altered everything in the past had it come at a time when something could still be altered. When you're young, you think that time moves forward. At 80, you know that it doesn't. It stands still. We're the ones that move.
See, if they said stuff like this at church, I probably would have stuck around. But they didn't.
That's why Dylan fans act like he's a prophet, you know. I mean, he just. That's why there's a religion around him in some way, even though he's not. He's just poetic.
Great. Yeah. Well, that's a perfect way to end.
Yeah. You're harder to program. I like that.
Sweet.
All right.
All right. See you next time.
Bye.